This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
You ever meet someone who seems kind of off? Whether it's a creepy neighbor or random phone number that keeps calling you, Truthfinder has you covered. You can search for people by name, address, phone number, email, and more. Truthfinder can be especially helpful for running confidential background checks on anyone you're planning to meet from online dating apps. Go to truthfinder.com/podcast for a special offer. That's truthfinder.com/podcasts to access your special offer today.
The first degree.
These things are supposed to happen in movies, not in real life.
From her, I got, you know, like that weird vibe in self-defense courses. They tell you don't ignore, like, if you get that off feeling about someone, don't, like, you don't have to let them in your life type of thing. I could tell something was, like, off about Stacy. Part of me wonders if she had, like, postpartum psychosis like Andrea Yates.
Just as a little bit of a trigger warning for anybody that is listening, we will be talking about very graphic things that involve newborn children. So if you have or if you're a little faint of heart or you don't.
Right. So we will be talking about crimes against infants. Mm-hmm. So if that is something that is deeply upsetting, we highly recommend proceed with caution.
Hey guys, welcome to The First Degree, the true crime podcast that you might end up on. My name is Jack Vanek. I'm sitting across from Alexis Linkletter and also kind of across from Billy Jensen because we are recording in a new spot and we feel fucking fancy.
We do really like it here. It's nice stuff.
We are in the heart of Hollywood right now.
We are.
At H House?
H Club.
H Club.
H Club.
H Club.
It's like a super cool members only place and I am in sweatpants.
We are right around the corner from the Capitol Records building.
Right. Mm-hmm. Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Hollywood Walk of Fame. And also right around the corner from the Frolic Room, which is a very famous dive bar that was also in LA Confidential.
Oh. It's a great bar.
What day is it, Billy?
It's National Siblings Day.
You picked that one out of all of them?
Yes, because if you're a religious person of the Judeo-Christian faith, the first ever murder was a siblings murder when Cain killed Abel.
Billy loves to flex his theology major muscle whenever yeah.
The religious studies major. I was not trying to be a pastor or anything, but yes.
God knows you couldn't be a pastor.
It is also...
You would be a very interesting pastor.
Quite.
Honestly, probably one of the better ones.
Right. I'd go to that church.
I would too.
It's also Encourage a Young Writer Day, which is always nice. And it's National Farm Animals Day.
And you forgot the best one. It is also National Cinnamon Croissant Day.
Mm. Croissant.
Croissant. Mm. Which I... like,
but tomorrow,
I like a flaky pastry myself.
Oh my God. Have you ever seen croissants being made? It is just like, it's very nice.
I haven't.
I watch that when I smoke weed at night.
I'm going to Google it on the YouTube machine.
On the YouTube machine?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to smoke weed when you do it?
No.
But tomorrow is National Chase Darkness With Me Day.
It
because
is.
Because my audiobook comes out tomorrow.
Everybody go buy that. There is a shout out for Alexis and I that is not in the audiobook, but...
we'll put it up on social. And yeah, so if you like the stories about the Golden State Killer, about the Bear Brook murders, there's two big chapters about that. And also if like we said, if you want to hear me talk and not have me be interrupted by Alexis and Jack for 9 hours straight, I believe it's 9 hours.
Nine?
Yeah.
How many pages is the book?
300.
Oh, shit. Yeah. That takes you 9 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it takes us an hour to get through like 6 pages of notes.
but that's mostly because we go on really insane tangents.
Yeah, there's no tangents in the book world.
There should be, though.
In the audio.
There should
world.
Be me yes. and Alexis like yelling at you.
Yeah, just berating you in the middle.
But yes, no. So yeah, you can get it at audible.com/chasedarkness or at Amazon. That's the only two places that you can get it.
Oh, everybody go buy it. And we're going to move on from that. And we've been toying around with the idea of doing like a true crime question. And then last week we talked about, we talked about Billy's beer carrying habits.
Maybe his beard color of the day.
Yeah.
Like he got a lot of sun that week.
But, you know, we've been talking us three about some of the reviews that we've been getting on iTunes and mostly the shit talking.
Well, we've actually discovered that the reviews about me are the most amusing.
They are the funniest. I mean, listen, I'm used to like people talking shit on me. It's like it kind of just comes with the territory. People have been like trolling me since I was 16 years old, so it's not that funny anymore. But for Alexis, it's a new
it's
thing.
New.
And nobody talks shit on Billy, so that doesn't
No, Billy's make... the golden child. He gets no criticisms.
I believe me. I get shit talked on.
No, yeah, you okay. Don't, not on our
on
podcast.
The dark, it's all on the dark
no,
web.
But for they're like, this fucking loser thinks that he's a cop.
Exactly.
No, but for this podcast, you are the golden child, and and Jack get it? But for some reason, Jack's mean comments will be like, Jack sucks. But mine will be like paragraph long explanations
really
about why
yeah.
I suck.
And mostly about your breathing habits.
Okay, which have improved, but I'm happy to
address.
Listen,
you guys should be happy that Alexis's anxiety has calmed down a bit.
I'm a
Maybe
new woman.
She's using the right concoction of medication.
You Maybe don't... I'm drinking the right amount.
Maybe she's drinking the right
Maybe
amount of
Maybe
I'm
alcohol. Working ahead enough
there
where
you go.
I don't have any, I'm not under pressure. But either way, we'll take your criticisms in stride.
So here's one of the criticisms of the week. And honestly, 4 stars that they have given us.
Okay.
Which is nice.
All right.
It says, love true crime. Love the podcast. But I'm just wondering if Alexis is sucking on candy or something during taping. The sucking noises she makes are making it hard to listen.
Oh.
I've been binge listening for a couple days, but I just had to turn it off because of the noises.
Okay.
Otherwise, I love everything else. Thank you.
Right.
Gucci Boy 2006.
Gucci Boy 2006.
Gucci Boy. Holla. Gucci Boy, I hear you. I don't suck on candy because I'm really neurotic about my teeth.
Yes.
I don't know what that noise is.
That must have been from the, if he's binging.
It's from the beginning.
It's probably
early
he's from
on.
The beginning. Yeah.
But I'm sure I do really annoying shit to everyone I know. So
I don't think you're annoying.
I don't doubt I believe I'm annoying.
As one of your best friends, I do not find you annoying
Thank
at all.
You.
And I know you
Billy?
Better than anybody.
You really do.
Yeah.
Billy?
What were you saying?
Am I annoying?
No, not
Billy
at all.
Billy just tunes
no.
us out.
Are you here? Are you with us?
I'm with you. Yeah.
I have to say, Gucci Boy, I hear you.
Yeah.
Power through till the new equipment phase. I
yes.
think it was around episode 15.
Yeah.
Yes.
I promise it gets better. I'm evolving every day. I'm striving to do better every day.
Yes. Take deeper breaths.
But I will make noise for my whole life. So I don't
you
know.
You are a human
yeah.
after all.
For
you,
sure.
You know what? And we're talking about death. And breath is life. So just remember that.
Yeah. Yes.
I love that.
It could be worse.
You're 100% right.
All right. Let's jump into our case.
We're going to jump into the case. And this case actually takes us to January 2004. And a bizarre case started unraveling in a matter of hours after a man named Bob Weigart called to report that a child in his presence was not responsive. And this is in the general area of Rochester, New York. We'll get more localized as it applies.
Mm-hmm.
But a child in his presence was not responsive, was what the call was. So the police and EMT rushed to the suburban Candice neighborhood, which is a specific neighborhood in Rochester. And on the way, my assumption is they're probably thinking, maybe we can resuscitate this child.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is a situation we can make better.
Right.
I mean, that's why EMTs are generally dispatched. But when they arrived, they noticed that it was odd when they arrived to the home. They noticed that portions of the house had been charred, and it looked like it had kind of been on fire. So they moved through the house, and they were eventually led to the basement. And there, Bob, you know, showed them this 30-gallon plastic storage bin that had been filled with concrete around what appeared to be the body of a newborn. And the child evidently was his infant niece, wrapped in a garbage bag, entombed in this concrete-filled sort of bin. And Bob Weygart later said to the media, "I remember holding it up in the plastic. It looked like something out of a horror movie."
I cannot imagine discovering that. I mean, that is truly
horrific.
Something out of a horror movie.
Right.
Like, I don't know if I've ever heard of that.
Anything like that.
Anything like that. So Dr. Michael Foote arrived at the scene and he pronounced the concrete entombed baby dead at 10:20 p.m. On the scene, the police learned that the home that they were called to was actually uninhabited due to the fact that it was partially burned down. The people that had lived there before relocated to a nearby town of Farmington. Bob Weygart explained that he had come to make this awful discovery, and he actually had been asked by his sister, Megan McLeod, to take a closer look at the contents of the garbage bag that she had found days earlier in the former home of their sister, Stacy DeBeer, and she was living there with her husband, Brian.
Yeah, and Megan McLeod, again, Bob's sister, she makes the initial discovery, and she takes a hammer to the concrete and finds the bag with what appeared to be covered like a cloth covering, and in what she at first thought was paint, but she later learns it was blood. And that's the thing with blood, particularly when it's older blood, it's going to be darker. Than mm-hmm. It's not going to look like, you know, the red blood.
It just looks kind of brown or black.
Exactly. Yeah. It usually looks brown. So Megan made this initial search because she intentionally went poking around after getting suspicious of Stacy. So Stacy had been pregnant the previous year, but no baby came out. Like, where's the baby? She said she was pregnant. Everything was going on. And then no
baby. The baby just never happened.
Never materialized.
And never, I don't think she ever said anything.
She just pretended like she wasn't pregnant anymore.
Right.
Hi, my name is Jaden. I'm 29. I live in upstate New York. So I'm at the De Beers in the early 2000s when my family, we moved to the neighborhood with... It's nicknamed Doe Haven because all the streets are named after like deer, like buckskin, whitetail, antler. Yeah, I was like 13 and it was the early 2000s when I met them. I knew their two children, and out of respect for their privacy, I'm not going to say their names. I met them one day randomly when I was out walking my dog named Bluey. I just happened to pass by the house and say, hi, my name is Jaden. It wasn't the type of neighborhood where the adults interacted. It was mostly the kids. The parents were either at work all the time or kept to themselves while doing yard work. But, you know, people would say hello if you said hello, and people would let you pet their dog if it was friendly.
All right, so let's talk about the couple that is kind of at the center of this. Their names are Stacy and Brian DeBeer, and they're a married couple. Stacy's 30 years old, and Brian is 32 years old. And they had been married since 1995, and they have two daughters, aged 6 and 8. And the pair had been together since they were, you know, 22 and 23. Brian graduated from a local Hanoi High School in 1990, and then he worked various jobs, and he eventually was doing just contracting work and became an independent contractor. And Brian DeBeer had essentially kept a relatively low profile before the police were called to his house that day.
So yeah, during the summertime when I was 13, when school wasn't in session and no extracurriculars or sports or anything to worry about, we would just hang out in each other's yards, basically, like a whole mess of us. Like, this would be, for example, the house during Halloween time where a bunch of people from the area would come to, because it's a huge development, so a lot of kids and stuff. So as far as the DeBeer house, outside there were like a bunch of kids' toys, and like squirt guns and stuff like that.
So Brian kept a pretty low profile, but his name was super notorious to the family of a 72-year-old woman who was killed in 2001 when he rear-ended the truck that she was riding on Candace Lake Road. He struck her car from behind, and it caused the car to hit a tree and flip over. The crash claimed Patricia Northrup and critically injured her husband, Donald. Brian was convicted of traffic infractions such as speeding and following too closely, and he served 15 days in jail. But Stacy had zero scuffs on her record.
So as far as Stacy goes, I interacted more with the husband because he was outside more. She stayed inside the house more, and she was also the type of parent, like, if someone's dog peed on the lawn, she would make you rinse the part of the lawn off with the hose so the grass wouldn't, you know, go bad. And you could just tell that something was off about her. Stacy was, I'm 5'8". She's like, I want to say 5'6". She had long blonde hair back then. No glasses. She might have worn contacts. She looked put together, yet sloppy at the same time. Like, she would wear dress clothes, but there'd be like stains all over it. So Brian Zavier, he was taller than me. He had short hair, clean shaven face, and overweight. And he'd be the typical dad to wear like sports team shirts and jeans or like khaki shorts and sneakers, stuff like that. Brian was more to hang out with the kids, and he seemed like a cool guy, and I didn't get any bad vibes from him. But again, I could tell something was like off about Stacy. From her, I got, you know, like that weird vibe in self-defense courses, they tell you don't ignore. Like, if you get that off feeling about someone, don't, like, you don't have to let them in your life type of thing. But she wasn't really a pleasant person, though.
So, needless to say, an investigation into these deceased infants starts right away. And they go straight to the home where the DeBeers live now to go and talk to them about this discovery that they had in the basement of their former home. When they get there, they immediately want to search this house too, and they comb through every room. And right when they think they've gone through everything, one of the officers makes an unbelievable discovery in the home's garden shed. And it's the remains of a second child in a pail, also entombed in concrete.
When I came home from school one day, there were cop cars everywhere. And then later that day, my friend, her name was Brenna, told me to read the news. And it was like a holy crap, what just happened when I saw the news. When I first heard it, I heard that they had found two babies encased in cement, and that the two children they had were getting taken out, and that the Brian and Stacy were arrested. As far as reacting to the news, my mom freaked out and I freaked out. That is something you don't expect from, I guess, anywhere you live. You don't expect weird crap to go down like that. And, you know, and I felt bad for the two kids I got to know over the summer. I was worried that something would happen to the two kids at some point. Or maybe I didn't get the hint that they were being abused or something. I worried about that every day for over a decade.
So upon this discovery, the neighborhood in which the DeBeers lived was completely shut down. Now the police had found two bodies of two infants. They had no idea if more would be discovered or uncovered and what really they were dealing with. And they essentially at this point knocked on every door to learn what they could about this couple. And also at this point, it's when Stacy and Brian were taken into the police station and separated. Their two daughters were put in the care of family members.
So an autopsy revealed that each of these infants were determined to be full-term newborns. There was no record of their births, which meant that they were self-delivered at home. Both were little girls. The baby that was found in the second concrete thing had a crumpled up piece of tissue stuffed in her mouth.
All right. So.
So awful.
Awful.
So the parents of the two dead infants are in the interrogation room with the police. And here's what they learn. Stacy DeBeer eventually confesses to having had 8 pregnancies. And remember, she has the 2 living children. She has the kids who are 6 and 8.
And then these 2 that were just discovered, and then now 4 more.
Yeah, so there's 3 pregnancies that ended in abortion, and she gave up 1 baby for adoption, and then the 2 deceased newborns that they just discovered. And Stacy tearfully admits that she had put one of the children up for adoption because she and her husband couldn't afford to raise 2 children. And then she describes in grim detail giving birth to the 2 slain children, one in March of 98 and the other on May 10th, which was Mother's Day 5 years later, excuse me, in 2003.
Another thing I want to mention is that when Stacy is arrested, she is pregnant.
Oh, my God. Again?
Yes.
How old is she?
30.
So that was very fertile. That was 9. That would have been the 9th pregnancy.
Right.
Jesus.
Wow.
It's fascinating, and we're going to get there. So Stacy essentially said that both of the children had been breathing and making sounds before she wrapped their little bodies in cloth and plastic, and they died. When the first one died, she explained that back then she had told a social worker that she was very overwhelmed with raising 2 toddlers and panicked when she was about to give birth again. She ended up delivering that baby herself on the couch. And when asked why she did not put the others up for adoption after she had put one up for adoption, she said she didn't know, and she didn't know what she was thinking. Oh, and geez. The infant girl, the first one was born alive, but again, she said she wrapped it up and put it in the basement because she was scared. And at that point, when her husband came home, Brian, she told him what happened, but the baby was dead. And then she said, you know, Brian worried I would go to jail, and we thought we should hide the baby.
Oh my God. So she's continuing, and according to her statement, while they're two alive children slept upstairs, Stacy and Brian put some concrete in the bottom of a large white bucket, put the baby in, and covered the baby in concrete. And she said that, I never meant for my life to be so out of control. I just wanted the best life possible for her 2 older children. I'm sorry it seems so trivial. I'm just so tired of everything, but I'm so glad that it's all out in the open. I never meant to hurt Brian and the kids. I don't want a lengthy, drawn-out trial. I just want to plead guilty and end it.
Yeah, so she's talking about, I don't want to hurt Brian and the kids, meaning her 2
children,
her 2
alive,
older children that are still alive, and she's not talking about these other 2 children that she murdered. So Brian is asked about all of this, and he corroborates what Stacy's story, and he tells police that, quote, we decided to place the baby in a 5-gallon bucket and pour concrete over the baby. It was my idea to do this. He said they kept the bucket in the basement, hoping to give the infant a permanent burial someday. And then that's also something, too, where it's just like, God, you've got this baby in a bucket. How do you not think about that every day?
It's just sitting in your basement. And like, oh, so nice that you want to give it a proper burial. Like, great.
Well, I think what we haven't mentioned yet is that also one of the babies, both of the babies apparently were delivered at this house that burnt down. Mm-hmm. They only brought one.
Right.
Over.
Right.
Because one was discovered in the basement of the burnt house. So,
and then the other one was in the shed.
Right. So they only brought one with them. And it's just so fascinating, like the things your brain is doing to make these decisions.
Yeah. Like why one and not the other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like maybe they brought, well, I think this is coming up, but we might as well just get into it now, is that apparently Brian knew about the first one and he helped. But the second one, I guess, she said was stillborn. But it's a lie. She killed that one,
she
too.
She said it was stillborn.
Right. So maybe in her head, she's like, I'll leave that one. Right. Like, that represents, like, me and my husband are in together on this one. He knows the truth. And I'm not a psychologist, so don't crucify me in this. But, I mean, just common sense kind of makes me feel that way, where it's like if your partner's in on it with you, you bring it. It's not as much of a taboo thing to have in the house, even though it's horrific.
It's could not be more horrific.
No, because if you have somebody with you there, then that becomes your new normal.
Right.
That's your normal. And the other person knows it as well. And our normal is we've murdered our child and have them in the basement, which is sick.
We're in on it. We're in it. We're a team on it.
How do you, these kind of cases always blow my mind, where it's, how do you find somebody else? Like, it's crazy enough for one person to be capable of doing something like this. And how do you find somebody to go along with what you are doing?
Well, I sort of get it in this situation. Only, I'm not saying it's okay, but I'm saying, like, Brian comes home, Stacy had this baby, it's dead, it's downstairs, she's hysterical. He's like, I can't have my wife go to prison. Like, no one knows this baby exists. Like, let's say we lost it and fucking get rid of this problem.
Right.
You know? And it's, he doesn't think it's ever going to, happen again. Lord knows what she told him, you know? And I don't know. I can kind of see it in this, because it's not really a real person to him yet.
Yeah.
Where it's like, they're adult children, have personalities and names. And I think, I don't know. I've never been pregnant. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what this is like. Billy, maybe you can weigh in.
I've never been pregnant either.
You are a father.
But I am a father. Yeah. No, I think it's just, it's the ideas that he was trying to rationalize this for himself, I think, was saying, who's going to take care of the, you know, like, this is a mother, maybe she was a good mother or whatever, but remember, you know, who's going to take care of the 6 and 8 year olds? If they actually went and did a burial, we're not talking about this case. The fact that the only reason why we're talking about this case is because they found them in this house.
Right.
In this burnt out house. So,
it's because they did it twice.
Yeah. The only reason why we're talking about that, if he actually did what they said he was going to do and actually take the bodies and actually give them what he said was a proper burial, we would not be talking about this. It would be done and they would have gotten away with it.
When I was growing up, I took French in high school, but I could never get the language to stick. I wanted to be fluent so bad, but it never happened. I just couldn't focus and I couldn't practice enough and it didn't work. But thankfully, there's Rosetta Stone, which is the most trusted language learning program, and it's available on desktop or it can be used as an app on your phone or tablet. Rosetta Stone is different. It immerses you in so many ways. And with its intuitive process, you can pick up any language naturally, first with words, then phrases, and then sentences. And before you know it, boom, conversations. Plus, with Rosetta Stone's true accent feature, you'll get feedback on how well you're pronouncing words. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the First Degree listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/first. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/first today. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for all of your springtime goals. If you don't have time, Factor's ready-to-eat meals are on the table in 2 minutes. So you just get to eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, cleaning up. You really just heat and savor the good stuff without all of the stress. You can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. Plus, you can pause and reschedule your deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution to premium, fast meals without the need for cooking. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. I'm so busy, so it's amazing to just have Factor meals in the fridge for whenever I realize that I'm starving and I don't have any time to cook anything. They're amazing, they're healthy, and they keep you fueled all day long. Head to factormeals.com/degree50 and use code degree50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's degree 50 at factormeals.com/degree50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Hey, there's no reason to feel sad or guilty about the things you aren't using anymore. Whether it was a fancy dress you wore to a gala, expensive heels that only go with one of your outfits, or that crossbody bag from when you were in your music festival era. Somebody out there wants what you don't, and The Real Real makes it easy to get it to them. When your past becomes their future, everyone wins, especially the planet. For The Real Real, Earth Month isn't just another month. It's what they do every day. At any given moment, they're finding new homes for over 1 million unique items within their community of 35 plus million people. They're the largest luxury reseller in the world, and making a tangible difference towards a more sustainable future for fashion. Resale reduces the amount of fashion waste in landfills, lowers greenhouse gas emissions, and offers an alternative to the cycle of consumption propagated by fast fashion. The Real Real has kept over 37 million items in circulation and out of landfills. This month only, new shoppers get 20% off when they shop on therealreal.com using code FIRST. That's therealreal.com using the code FIRST.
Most of these cases go undiscovered.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Most of these, I mean, this happens all the time.
Yeah, but that's what I'm wondering. It's like, why, what do you think, like, the reasoning is for them to have just kept them?
I don't know.
You know?
I think, personally,
do you think it's, they don't want to acknowledge it any further to move it? Or know, it's like, is it like some sick
I think she's not a sociopath. I think she's ill.
Sick, yeah.
I think you have a lot of mixed feelings, and so you just kind of are paralyzed, and you just leave it there and ignore it. And I was reading about this kind of crime. It's like neonaticide. It's when babies are killed in the first 24 hours. Mm-hmm. One of the most glaring characteristics that these offenders share is passivity. You're passive.
Yeah.
You're passive about the pregnancy. You deny it. You never want to like confront what's happening. So you kind of just ignore.
And until it actually happens.
Until it happens,
until it literally
and then you ignore.
In front of you. Yeah. In front of your eyes.
You see it with younger offenders who commit these acts. Calling them offenders is so hard because a lot of them are teenagers who are confused and scared. So I don't even want to say that. There's a really famous case where a girl gave birth at her school and then went back to prom during prom.
Oh my God.
She didn't even look pregnant. It's not real. That was and they're in total denial in that they don't even believe that baby's alive. They're like, oh, it was a miscarriage and you know, but they really believe it.
Yeah. I can see. Again, it's like you don't understand it, but it's like I can see that for a way younger person.
But somebody that has already delivered, that's the thing.
Well, you know what these children
somebody
grow
has
up to be.
Yeah, you've like, already delivered and you have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old at the time. But you've seen what those things turn into.
Yeah, they're not just some like intangible, unalive nothingness. Yeah.
Absolutely. And we'll get into, we do learn later a little bit more about Stacey and her frame of mind. But to reset and recap where we were, so Stacey's in interrogation and she described to the police before the circumstances surrounding the first birth and the first baby. So she did move on to the second baby, who was born, as Billy said, 5 years later on Mother's Day. And she said that she delivered this baby alone in the living room, swabbed its mouth with a tissue, and then used kitchen scissors to cut the umbilical cord. And according to handwritten notes of the investigator who conducted the interview, Stacey said, "The baby was alive. I panicked. I wrapped the baby in a cloth and plastic bag and took it out to the shed." Days later, with her kids in the car and the infant's body in the trunk, Stacey allegedly brought, you know, water and 2 bags of concrete, and she dropped the kids off at her mother's and then drove to a remote location
She said, I took the baby out of the trunk, put concrete in the bottom of the Rubbermaid tote, put the baby in the middle and filled the rest with concrete, put the top on the tote and sat down to gather myself. And, you know, eventually this tote ended up in their shed.
So this is the point where Brian and Stacy's stories start to differ. Brian tells police that he got a different story in relation to this second baby. He said, she told me that they rushed her to Strong Memorial Hospital where they delivered the baby. The baby was stillborn and the cord was wrapped around her neck. He said he believed his wife, and when she told him the baby was born still and could not be revived.
So she then, that means she did the same, she did that alone with the concrete.
Right. Yeah.
So let's talk about how these crimes are classified. So this particular act is known as neonaticide, and it's, as Alexis was talking about, it's when a murder is committed within an infant's first 24 hours of life. And these types of crimes beg that question in a country where abortion is legal, and most states have safe haven laws permitting the no questions asked drop-offs of unwanted babies. Why would a sane mother ever resort to killing her newborn child, especially, as we were saying, a mother that had already delivered birth and was raising two other children. Mm-hmm.
And had put children up for adoption, like knows her.
She's done literally everything.
Right.
Any possibility.
Absolutely. So back to what Billy was saying about neonaticide, an extremely conservative estimate puts the incidence of neonaticide in the U.S. at 150 to 300 annually. And as we said earlier, there's no way to know how many times this happens.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, most neonaticide committers are under 20, under 25, like college, high school, and they don't show. And it's this fascinating thing, and there are studies about it, where if they don't believe they're pregnant, they actually don't really show.
Really?
Yeah. So these girls...
So it's really psychological.
It's all of it. It's like, I feel like you lean into it when you know you're pregnant and you're embracing it. You eat more and you...
You eat more, you're taking your neonatal vitamins, you're doing all this stuff. And if they're not doing any of that, those things, then, you know, there's a reason why you're taking the folic acid.
And, and they're probably dressing to conceal it. Like in a lot of these cases, no one had any idea. They weren't showing. This one girl that I referenced in the prom dress was wearing a prom dress that did not look pregnant. So there's no really way to know how many happen a year, but researchers for decades have studied mothers who kill their newborn babies and in the process have found sufficient similarities between cases that, you know, this behavior is kind of considered a syndrome. And experts say that harming the child is not something these mothers anticipate doing once they're thrust into the situation of having to handle a live childbirth on their own. They panic. They act impulsively. Mm-hmm. They want to pretend it didn't fucking happen.
Right.
And I think a lot of them, like I said, will be like, this isn't real. This baby's dead. This isn't a baby. This is God knows what their brain does when they're freaking out to that degree.
So this is actually a book by Cheryl Meyer and Michelle Oberman called Mothers Who Kill Children. And the book notes, quote, neonaticidal behavior is often influenced by relatively intangible factors, such as emotional isolation and perceived lack of resources, then by stereotypical indicators like race or financial standing, which is interesting because you see that a lot in suicide as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A 1995 report on psychiatric law from the National Center for Biotechnology Information reported that neonatal homicide rates were lower in the 10 years following Roe v. Wade, and that neonaticide is proportionally higher in rural areas where abortion may not be socially acceptable or readily available.
That's not a shocker.
Not a shocker at all.
So as far as neonaticide goes, it's considerably more commonly committed by mothers than fathers, according to the same study that Billy referenced, so I'm not going to keep repeating that. But between 1976 and 1997, it was determined that mothers were responsible for those deaths of children during infancy, while fathers were more likely to be responsible for murders of children 8 or older. And I thought that was very interesting.
That is really interesting.
Yeah. So 90% of neonatal 90% of neonaticidal mothers are 25 years of age or younger, which actually puts Stacy in this very odd 10% category. And less than 20% are married. Less than 30% are seen as psychotic or depressed. And interestingly, or not so much, not maybe not surprisingly, the U.S. ranks first in homicide of children under age 4.
Wow.
Right. 45% of all child murders occur in the first 24 hours of life. Yes. And criminal psychologist Philip J. Resnick is actually the man who coined the term neonaticide. And he conducted a massive study on filicide, which is the murder of children overall.
As far as her having so many kids and not stopping, I'm glad she put one up for adoption, I suppose, but it's still a very messed up situation. And I'm just like, there are so many people I know that can't even have one kid. Part of me wonders if she had like postpartum psychosis like Andrea Yates. I don't think she was born evil. I think she was born good. But in high school, we were talking about this, and I had a musical director at the time. She was like, yeah, I knew Stacy in high school, and we all knew her parents were abusing her. So I think that partially shaped her into who she was being abused and not getting proper therapy or dealing with it. As far as like having compassion for her, I too have been abused, but I've seek therapy and, you know, I've stayed out of trouble and shit. So on one level, I understand how she became the way she became, but I don't have empathy or compassion for a person that perpetuates the cycle.
We don't know what kind of abuse Stacy suffered, and we tried very hard to get that information. She pled guilty, so there wasn't a trial, so we don't know. That didn't come to the surface. But abuse is interesting when you're talking about this situation, because Stacy is in that kind of outlier demographic of women committing neonaticide.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, it's younger. You know, she's 30. She has a partner. Usually, they don't have partners.
Yeah.
Usually, they don't have kids.
They don't have their own kids. Yep.
Exactly. And so, it's her situation is not normal as far as the circumstances surrounding this happening. And I'm sure abuse has something to do with it.
You got to think, because she had the option, she knew what the options were.
She had gone through
putting a child up for adoption.
She had an abortion.
She had an abortion.
She had the children. She's literally done everything that you could do.
And you have to think that maybe, and I'm not anything way of giving her an excuse, but were those processes incredibly traumatic for her that she decided to do this instead?
Mm-hmm.
Super less traumatic.
I mean, that's the that's the fucking crazy
thing.
This
is the most traumatic thing in the fucking world.
Yeah.
No, but speculating on this is fascinating. And everybody listening, we're not psychologists. This is just our common sense speaking, where we're trying
we're just three normal humans wondering what the fuck is
going
on.
Right, and trying to understand. I mean, Billy has kids. Jack and I don't. But we understand life a little.
Yeah.
Where enough. It's like, yeah, enough to know. Assume we would know what to do in this situation. I don't know, but I don't know what kind of abuse she suffered, so it's hard to comment further.
Yeah.
But presumably it had something to do with it, because
obviously it's related enough. Yeah,
of course.
It's gotta be.
Of course.
Like, as someone who's been abused, you know, I say go into therapy if you're in a situation. Yeah, you can't just fucking go out and take it out on the world. You gotta deal with your shit. It takes time, but it will get better. It's not okay to go out and hurt other people and lash out at other people.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
You ever meet someone who seems kind of off? Whether it's a creepy neighbor or random phone number that keeps calling you, Truthfinder has you covered. You can search for people by name, address, phone number, email, and more. Truthfinder can be especially helpful for running confidential background checks on anyone you're planning to meet from online dating apps. Go to truthfinder.com/podcasts for a special offer. That's truthfinder.com/podcasts to access your special offer today.
So what, so they were both arrested.
Yeah.
So what charges were they facing?
So Stacey was indicted on 4 counts of second degree murder in connection with the deaths of her children. And Brian was indicted on a charge of hindering prosecution by helping her dispose of one of the bodies in 1998. They both pled guilty at separate arraignments. Stacey told the police that she doesn't want a long trial. She just wanted to plead guilty. And Brian said that he was sorry for what he had done. So it didn't look like either of them were fighting this. They're super remorseful and like taking full responsibility.
Right. Yeah.
So Stacey was held without bail. Brian's bail was set at $75,000, and if convicted, Stacey was facing up to 25 years in prison. And this is a sidebar, but during all of these criminal proceedings, Brian actually files for divorce from Stacey. Stacey is eventually sentenced to 30 years to life in prison for killing their newborn less than a year earlier and for killing the second baby girl in 98. Brian is convicted of hindering prosecution for entombing one of the two babies in concrete, and he was sentenced to the maximum. And the maximum was just 2 1/3 to 7 years in prison. And Stacey is now serving out her sentence of 30 years to life in prison.
So after these sentences were handed down, Stacey's family talked to the media, and they essentially believe that Brian had a lot more to do with all this than he claimed and was actually blamed for. So, quote, "It's just a bad deal. We knew he had more to do with it, but there was only so much they can do," said Bob Weigart, who is Stacey's brother. And he, at this point, has been estranged from Stacey, like after the legal proceedings had gone through. Mm-hmm. I mean, they kind of lost touch because I think it was probably a horrifying situation. Mm-hmm. And Bob continued, he said, "He has put a hurtin' on a lot of people." And their their children, 6 and 8 year old children, ended up with Stacey's mother and were placed in their care ever since the day they had been arrested.
So sad.
I know.
Oh my God. Like, can't even imagine. So after Brian's conviction, he ended up in prison, and he got denied parole twice, both in 2006 and in 2008. And in their ruling, board members who reviewed his case called his actions heartless, cowardly, and heinous. And he was then released from prison on September 16th, 2008.
And so his release was not met with joy, but he gets out in 2008 after serving just 2/3 of his sentence. And the state law mandates that prisoners be released at that point, 2/3, if they've behaved while they've been locked up, even if the Board of Parole recommends otherwise. So within a day of his release, he has to go to the New York State Division of Parole's Rochester office. He remains under their close watch until January 16th. 2011, which is the date that his prison sentence would have timed out had he served all 7 years.
As far as having a weird feeling about her and feeling right about that, my gut feeling is typically right, and I'm glad I know not to ignore it. I feel really bad for the children in this case, though, because I don't know what their friends found out or what was said to them growing up. I just hope, you know, they were able to get in therapy and, you know, like were placed with decent family members and stuff. And I actually just hope that mom never gets paroled. As far as doing what Stacey did, I think, like, Bundy, a sociopath, and for her husband to help, I think it was, he did it out of love, but also at the same time was a dick move.
because, again, I am the type of person that would have gone to the cops and I would have left that relationship and taken the kids. But that's me.
Wow. Yeah. That is a dick move.
Dude, I mean, nothing describes that better as a dick move than a dick move.
It's the dickiest move there ever was.
Yeah.
And like dick moves is put it lightly. Like it's the most fucked up thing in the entire
describing
world.
Describing Stacey as a sociopath, relating her to Bundy, and then just saying for Brian to help, that's a dick move. It's an understatement.
It's an understatement for sure. But
listen, Jaden is being really nice. Yep. Because, you know, Brian was his favorite of the two. And he did hang out with him more than with Stacey. And I think Stacey's just not well.
Yeah.
Truly. Like, you know, she cried and she said, I want to plead guilty. And, you know, that's not like a
sociopath.
It's not a sociopath thing to do. You're right.
You know, I think at the time, again, it's this idea of like passive. I totally understand what that study was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you are so scared to confront what's happening that you just. And I think it is rooted in mental illness.
Yeah, it's like putting blinders on and pretending it doesn't exist.
Exactly. But, you know, could she do a horrific, heinous, like, strangling of a person? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think it's just, you know, it's for her, it was passive. It's like, it's an infant. It can't care for itself. If I put it over here, it'll die.
It's a lot, yeah, it won't exist. It's a lot easier to kill an infant than it would be to kill a human being.
It's less violent.
Yeah. Well, it's not a human. Well, they're all human beings, but yeah. But
An adult.
An adult.
Or a child that's
will react.
Yeah, there's less connection.
The craziest thing about this case is the fact that she had kids. I've heard those stories, like the girl at the prom. I've heard the stories of teenagers that go to the bathroom during school.
Yeah, like teenage athletes
and have,
do it.
And,
yeah, yeah.
And
deliver
have,
the baby.
Deliver the baby in the toilet.
Put it in a trash
and then
can.
Put
yeah.
it in a trash can. You hear those stories. This was a woman who had already delivered birth to two healthy children, had also done the two things that are the...
Options.
The options, which is, you know, she had an abortion and she also gave a child up for adoption. It's just... There's something there, man. I mean, it's
very
so
odd.
Strange.
Well, it's like, do we want to have that little discussion about if, like, how you're talking about that she may be addicted to being pregnant?
Well, I mean, I think just we were talking about the abuse, and I referenced the Diane Downs case. And if you guys don't remember, I had to watch a 2020 on it that just aired to remind myself, but she essentially was convicted of murdering her two children because she was dating a man who didn't want children. And then she, as soon as she did this, she was like being questioned. She went and she got pregnant again. And it's like, she just killed her two children. And, you know, the evidence was glaring. And it's like, I don't know if they see it as like a form of control. And I'm not talking about Stacey specifically in this situation.
Yeah.
But some women are, I think it's a high, like they love the attention of being pregnant. It's a part of them. It's sort of like a narcissistic thing.
Well, we see this, and this story, as we were starting to tell it, could have veered off into she was pregnant and then no baby materialized. And then it could have veered off into one of those stories where mm-hmm. she goes and she kills a woman that was pregnant and actually takes her baby, which
sure.
we've seen before. This obviously was completely different because she actually was pregnant.
Yeah.
And then she, yeah.
It's fascinating, and I would love to muse about it, but I just don't want to be chastised for not being a professional. But I do think I have an understanding of, like, you know, it's part of you, and if you've been abused and you have this horrible relationship with yourself, you don't want these babies, but you're looking for love. Like, I could see how a psychoanalyst may see it. You had a horrible upbringing, hypothetically. You keep having babies because you want people to love you. When they materialize, it's self-loathing. And you're like, get it. It's part of me. I don't want it. I see it.
Or like, now it's not part of me anymore.
Right. And this is, again, I don't want to hear any DMs about how I don't know what I'm talking about. Admittedly, I don't. But I feel
they're speculating.
I admittedly, I do feel like I'm onto something with this.
Are you?
Yeah, as an unmedical professional, yes, it makes sense to me. I mean,
right.
As someone who's been to hella therapy, I know what they would say. And I think I'm close.
Oh,
So, you guys, I know we talked about a lot of disturbing things, but the truth of the matter is that these are real issues that women grapple with.
Yes.
Unwanted pregnancy. It's scary to be young and pregnant and not know what to do, or old. I mean, people find themselves in situations all the time where you never know what really is going on.
Yeah. And I think the biggest takeaway from this is there are options. And I mean, we were looking up the safe haven laws because we don't know that much about it personally. I haven't had to deal with it personally, but apparently all 50 states have places that you can drop off your baby, no questions asked. So that is good to know. And of course, there are many other options as well. So if you find yourself in this type of situation, thank God for Google, and hopefully there is a better option.
Yeah. And I know every state is dealing with their different sort of logistics.
Yeah.
And we have compassion for these situations that come up because no two are alike. There's no guidebook for this kind of thing. It's scary and terrible. But we will say handling it the way Stacey handled it is probably not the move.
Might be the worst way to handle it.
Right.
And the way Brian handled it, too. As Jaden said, it was a dick move.
Dick move.
Dick move. God damn it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Jaden, for being our first degree connection today. We really appreciate you. And it was a very interesting story to tell. And I think that there is a lot of takeaways from it. If you are connected to a murder or other stranger than fiction story, please write us at The First Degree on Instagram. Slide into our DMs, Alexis Linkletter, at Billy Jensen, at Jack Vanek. Or you can write into our submissions page or email us hello@thefirstdegreepodcast.com. My emails pop up in my, actually there's something that's really weird with that email that's on my phone that I only get notifications for that email.
I don't get any, and you read them before me, and it's people who are like, hey, Alexis, I didn't hear back from you. I'm like, bitch, didn't email me back, and it's because you check it first.
Because it's the only thing that pops up as a notification in my email
app. We need to work on that,
I need
the notifications, you do. Not you.
I read it, and I'm like, that's an incredible story. Doo-doo-doo sandwich.
And then I never know about it.
Doo-doo-doo sandwich.
Doo-doo-doo spritz and sandwich.
Yeah, I was like, oh, what kind of wine am I ordering on this menu?
Exactly.
And it's like, I was Ted Bundy's
and I'm
girlfriend.
Staring at the phone waiting for a response, and Jack reads it first, so I don't get it.
Sorry. Well, you know, that's why you have to do like a double tap, like DM Alexis as well.
Right.
Okay. Well, until then, keep your friends close, but not that close.
Bye.
Happy Young Writer Day.
That's right.
It was a cinnamon croissant day.
Happy cinnamon pastry day.
Croissant.
Croissant.
Croissant. Croissant.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.